Okay, Mr. Burns.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court again, my name is Danny Burns, and I represent Mr. Bernard Tucker, the appellant in this case. I have three issues, it's brief, I don't want to weigh in. With the court's permission, I'd like to address the sufficiency of the evidence first, and then go into the improper photo spread identification. After that, if I have any time left, which I doubt, we'll address the gory pictures that were admitted, but I don't want to waive that last issue, but I'm just not going to address it in all probability in my argument. I know the court knows this case and read the facts, but because of the audience we have, I'd like to just give a quick summary of the facts. This is a case where four people drive up in a apartment complex in a motor vehicle. They're approached by three individuals. They're asked about a person being with them. They didn't know who they were. They told them to go away, and suddenly shots started being fired. The people get out of the vehicle, start to run, one of which was a lady by the name of Shakina Ward. Shakina Ward was shot three times. She said that she looked back and she did see who shot her. She said that it was Bernard Tucker, who was the person who fired the shots that hit her in the face, putting out her eye, in the jaw and in the back. Other people in the vehicle ran off. There was a fourth person out there, or a fifth person, I should say, who gets shot. And that's the real sufficiency of the evidence question here. I don't, if state was prosecuting him for Shakina Ward, it's a slam dunk. If they were prosecuting him for shooting McElroy or shooting at McElroy, it's a slam dunk. But Mr. Tony Jones isn't there. I mean, he's away. State says, well, he was near, but that's sort of a supposition on their part, because there's no evidence of where he was, except in the apartment complex somewhere. They heard shooting, or he heard shooting, to his left, he said, and he and some others moved away out into the parking lot to get away from any type of shooting. And while he was over there, a shot hits him. Now, there's no evidence. He doesn't see the people. I mean, not close enough for that anyway, or near enough, I guess, use the state's words. To see who was shooting or what was going on over there, he just heard some shooting, got out of the way. Now, I submit to you, unfortunately, in our life and in our society, there's a lot of shooting. Sometimes people shoot in the air as a celebration and accidentally hit people, other people shooting. There's no evidence that anybody was shooting in the direction even of Mr. Tony Jones. Now, Tony Jones got hurt extremely bad. I mean, he was paralyzed and in a wheelchair because of being shot. But there's no showing that any of that came from the three individuals who were over at a different apartment area shooting at people in a car and getting out of a car. Now, the state argues that somehow this is based or can be decided on the theory of transferred intent, but that didn't work. Transferred intent is where I decide I'm going to shoot one of these good folks out here, and I'm a really lousy shot, and I hit somebody else who's near them. But I have an intent to shoot that individual and to harm them, and I get somebody else. That's transferred intent. That's not what happened here. What we have here is a question of who it was that fired the shot that actually hit Tony Jones. There is no evidence in this record as to where that shot came from, as to direction. They didn't even do ballistics in this case. They had, they don't even have to have the gun. Now, the forensic person on the firearms person says, well, she could tell that, the guns that were seized later were McElroy, I mean, not McElroy, Tucker and his friend were had an apartment. They arrested them there, and they found some guns there. Some of those guns matched in size and caliber the bullets that were fired at the scene. Realistically, there's no real contention that those weapons weren't firing the same bullet. The bullet that was taken out of Tony Jones, though, was never tested. They had firearms. They had, I mean, they had shell casings. They could have tried to match that bullet tube or cartridge, I mean, the shell lead that was removed from his body. But they didn't. They could have tried to do ballistic comparisons with other shells that were found, the shells that were taken from Chiquita Ward. They didn't do that. They didn't do anything to connect the shot that hit Tony Jones to the people that were shooting in a different area of the apartment complex as coming from those weapons or from those individuals. There's not any evidence they didn't present during the trial that if you're at the apartment where the shooting was going on and you show where the apartment or where, where Tony Jones was standing when he got hit, you know, how the angle would be right or anything of that nature. They just said, well, they were shooting out here, so somewhere over there, you know, wherever it was, the other end of the apartment complex, three doors down, whatever, that it must be the same. And that's not good enough in a criminal case, where it has to be proof beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, reasonable doubt, it amazes me, the standards, but in a civil case, the evidence can be insufficient. And in the exact same evidence in a criminal case would be sufficient because somehow a reasonable jury could believe it. But that's the system we're working under. But you have to have some evidence to base your decision. There's nothing in here that shows that the bullet that goes into Tony Jones' body came from any of the weapons fired at the time by the three assailants, including Renard Tucker, and there's no evidence that there's, it's even the bullet fragment that was taken out of Tony Jones was even comparable, you know, with ballistic striations or anything else to any of the weapons or any of the other bullets that were recovered. I mean, there's just nothing here, and I submit to the court that there's just no evidence to show that Renard Tucker intentionally, knowingly, or even accidentally shot Tony Jones. It's just not there. Not based upon what was testified to and presented in court.
Well, is there evidence that either one of the other two men shot Tony Jones?
No.
Is there evidence to match the bullet that came out of him with one of the three guns that were found?
There's nothing to show that those three people that were shooting over there were the people that shot the bullet that went over and hit Tony Jones. And that's the problem we have. It's not, and
so that
quite frankly, it took me a while reading this record to realize that there was a problem.
That would also prevent liability, I mean, lost liability, guilt under the party, as party or the third theory of the state. I forgot what it was, but anyway.
The transferred intent. Yes, Your Honor, if you have to have under parties one of two things, there, and I don't apply to consider whether it is 702 be a parties charge, but the conspiracy part of the parties charge, even then you have to have an intent to do the act and such, but under straight parties charge, you know, you have to aid, abet, encourage, assist, some way, you know, get the person to assist, to do the act. And there's no evidence that these folks did that act. There's just, I mean, I'll concede that there's a high probability that got as many weapons being fired there, you know, that one of them came from that area. But that's not the problem. That's not the standard of proof. The standard of proof is beyond a reasonable doubt that the individuals who are firing over there are the one or more of them are the people or the person that put the bullet into Tony Jones. And again, they're just, I mean, maybe even they could have gone reckless. But there's no intent and no knowledge shown that would allow for a conviction on count two. I don't know why the state chose count two, but they did. And they're stuck with it. And I submit to the court that just insufficient evidence. The second part issue that we've raised as count as point one, of course, is the improper identification. The state had pulled out six photo spreads, but really, if you look at the facts, they only used one, because five of the people didn't look anything like the description that was given. And only one person stood out, you know, like a honeybee going from flyer to flyer. And that was Renard Tucker. You know, he had not shaved head like the other people, or some of the other people. He had a short crop hair. He didn't have, you know, a bushy hair like a couple of the people out of the photo spread. He's the only one that matched there. And McElroy, when he was doing, when he was being cross-examined, admitted. Renard Tucker was the only person that even came close to matching the descriptions of what they said, who they said did it. I mean, as the defense did have a motion, and I think they proved that, you know, based upon age, the other people were obviously older than Renard Tucker. The hairstyles were all different from Renard Tucker, and they were also different from the descriptions given. So I submit to the court that that the defense proved the issue of an improper photo spread. And of course, it doesn't fit the new criteria for photo spread, when you have to have you have to have sort of blind photo spread and the other things, but this was before that went into effect. Now, I'll admit that, you know, we mentioned dispensa. We don't have quite as hard and as strong misidentification evidence as was in dispensa, but we do have the fact that these people didn't identify Renard Tucker. First of all, Shekinah Ward never knew him and never saw him before. And they were running away, and it was only with a glance, and then she gets shot in the face, she gets shot in the back, and it's a terrorizing act. But she doesn't give a description sufficient to the police that they can identify Renard Tucker. Only when they were talking to other individuals and confession admitted that sort of brought it home too, but that was unobjected to, that you know, Renard Tucker was part of this, and that's how they got him in. But they didn't show him something that would have allowed a fair comparison and a fair photo lineup pickup, because everyone looked the same. Jalen Willis, who was a person, he wasn't one of the individuals, he saw the shooting, and he described that the person who was the shooter that was hitting people was a fat man, fat black man. And of course, if you can look at Renard Tucker's picture, 63 and 64, or 62 and 63, it's in the brief what numbers they are. He doesn't fit that. He's not a fat individual. So I submit to the court that also was error that caused an innocent man to be picked out and identified by the person who was shot and by McElroy, who had possibly a good reason, or some sort of reason, not to be completely truthful with the police, as shown by the record. The other issue that was admitted was they proved most of their case through Shekinah Ward, and then didn't submit her case to the jury. But what they did submit was the very terrible, horrible pictures of her injuries, shortly after the shooting. She lost her eye, her face is swollen, you know, the injuries to her back. That was bad enough.
I believe your time has expired.
I'm sorry, here. Ah, there it is.
You're from the state, Sharon Johnson.
Sharon Johnson, the state. I imagine I had better begin as Mr. Burns did with his second issue, which is sufficiency of the evidence. And I would point out that Mr. Burns was not the trial attorney, a different attorney tried this case at trial. First of all, there is no indication in the record that a bullet was removed from Tony Jones. The only indication in the record is that the bullet that paralyzed Tony Jones is still in his spine, so it was not available for comparison with any of the casings found in the scene. And comparison of bullets and casings is always a tricky thing anyway. So I'd just like to get that out of the way. Interestingly enough, the defense at trial was not that the state failed to prove that Tony Jones was shot as an innocent bystander or collateral damage in this particular transaction. The defense at trial was that, yes, Lauren Silas is one of the proper co-defendants. Shane Fowler is one of the proper co-defendants, but a man named Antoine Capel is the third person, and Renard Tucker is mistakenly included in that group of three who were out there shooting that day. So the defense was not that one of those three people didn't shoot Tony Jones. It was that one of those three people shot Tony Jones, but it was Renard Tucker wasn't one of the three people. It was this other guy named Antoine Capel. And interestingly enough, in their opening statement at trial, the defense attorney told the jury that, yes, an innocent bystander was shot and paralyzed. We do not dispute that. And something I have never seen before, when the state called Tony Jones to the witness stand to testify, defense counsel at trial objected to him being called as a witness, arguing that he had no relevant testimony to offer the jury because there was no dispute that he was the victim and it was uncontroverted that he was shot during this transaction. So this was not the position taken at trial.
Does the argument of trial counsel
is not evidence? No.
There you go. Thank you.
But I am just pointing that out, that the difference there. Candidly, as the court is aware from having read the briefs and having read the statement of facts in this case, the court is record, we don't have a witness who can say, I saw Renard Tucker fire a gun and I saw the bullet strike Tony Jones and he fell to the ground. We don't have that. We don't have direct testimony. We don't have testimony from witness who can say that one of his two companions fired their guns at Tony Jones and Tony Jones was struck and hit the ground. We don't have direct evidence. What we have is circumstantial evidence. And circumstantial evidence is as probative as any other kind of evidence. What we have is three individuals who surround a Jeep four occupants start demanding to know where some individual is, and these people don't know who that individual is. The motive for this shooting is very murky. Nobody ever really came forward with the motive for it. But anyway, all three of them then open fire at the occupants of the vehicle. And we know that all three of them fire their weapons because of the firearms examiner's testimony and the crime scene officer's testimony that 10 millimeter casings are found at the scene and 40 caliber casings are found at the scene. And the firearms examiner subsequently matches the 40 caliber cases to the two weapons that are recovered from Shane Ballard's apartment when Renard Tucker and Lord Cyrus are arrested in that apartment on April 6th. So we do not have direct testimony. We have circumstantial evidence. There's shooting going on from three individuals in this parking lot in the afternoon of March 31st, 2010. Tony Jones hears the shooting, doesn't see who's doing the shooting. He gets shot. As a result, he ends up paralyzed. There's no indication that anyone else is shooting in this parking lot at that day, that any other kind of violent incident is going on. And
what evidence is in the record concerning Tony Jones' location in relation to the parking lot where the shooting has occurred?
I read the record again yesterday, Your Honor, and I have to admit that I don't find any diagrams or photographs identifying his location at the time of the shooting.
Testimony?
Only that he's sitting and he hears the shooting. He doesn't know where it's coming from. He's struck and he falls, and that is the state of the record.
If he does not know where it's coming from, to me that implies he can't see it. If he can't see it, he can't be shot.
Well, I don't know what direction he's looking at. From his testimony, as soon as he hears shots being fired, as I understand his testimony, he and his companions ducked down behind some cars But as he's ducking down, that's when he strikes. So he's not standing there looking around, looking to see where the shots are coming from. He's just trying to get out of that many bullets. That is the testimony that I recall. Just as the court is aware, sufficiency of the evidence is viewed in the light most favorable to the verdict, and I do believe it's a reasonable deduction from the state of the record in this case that Tony Jones was shot by either Bernard Tucker or one of his two companions that afternoon. The jury was charged on both lawing parties and transferred intent. There never was any argument at trial that Tony Jones was the intended victim here. The intended victims were all of the people in the But anyway, turning to the photo spread, it's not required that every individual in the photo spread be indistinguishable from every other individual. The photo spread in this case is not a situation where you look at the six photos presented to the witness and say, one of these photos doesn't look like the others. In one of these photos, there's an individual wearing glasses and the other five individuals aren't wearing glasses. One of the individuals is wearing a prison jumpsuit, the others are wearing civilian clothes. All of the individuals are African Americans. The description that the police have was very vague. It was an African American male, heavy set, possibly with short hair. So there wasn't a lot of description provided to them from the witnesses, but they were all African American. They were all heavy set. Some of them had short hair, some of them had longer hair. And I think Mr. Burns said something about his client having short hair. That is not how I view the photo spreads that states Exhibit 62 and 63. He does have quite a bit of bushy hair, but so do the individuals in picture number one and picture number five. And there was some complaint also at trial about the ages of the individual, and again, individuals number one and number six also appear to be youthful, approximately the same as Mr. Tucker. The critical inquiry is that just this photo stand out. If you don't know anything about this case, you don't know who the person is, do you look at it and say, this individual captures my attention, my eye is drawn to this person, and that's just not the situation here. And I also, the second part of the inquiry here is whether there's a substantial likelihood of misidentification, whether there's an independent basis other than the photo spread for the party's identification of the defendant at trial. It's true that Ms. Ward had never seen any of the three individuals who shot at them that day before. Nonetheless, this did occur in daylight. She was sitting in the driver's seat of the Jeep. Mr. Tucker, other witnesses say, was standing at the back passenger door, so there was not a great deal of distance. When Detective Fenner presented her with the photo spread, she immediately and unhesitatingly identified him, as she did at trial, and the identification was within 5 days after the offense. The offense was March 31st, and the identification was April 4th. The other witness who identified Bernard Tucker from the photo spread is Brandon McElroy, who actually knew him prior to the shooting. He didn't know his name, he wasn't a friend or close acquaintance, but he had seen him in the company of Lauren Cyrus on several occasions previously. He testified at trial that he was no more than 5 feet away from Bernard Tucker that day, immediately recognized him in the photo spread, and he was cross-examined somewhat extensively on his identification. He was adamant that as soon as he saw that photograph, he knew who it was. And again, his identification was also within 5 days of the offense. I would also point out that it is the burden of the appellant to show by clear and convincing evidence that this photo spread is impermissibly suggestive, and it is his burden to show that there wasn't an independent basis for identification. The last issue, the photographs, three photographs of Shaquina Ward's injuries were introduced to trial. I think Mr. Burns called them gory. I know it was briefly called them gruesome, and maybe I've been doing this too long, but they just didn't seem that way to me. Frankly, when I read in the record that a photograph was being introduced of Ms. Ward's eye injury, she ended up losing an eye as a result of this, I thought I was going to see some gaping, bloody wound, and what you see is a closed eyelid and a tiny trickle of blood off to the side. It's just really not inflammatory at all. The other two photographs are injuries to her chin, and the chin is split open for several inches. You do see tissue, you do see musculature, but again, this is not the kind of inflammatory photograph that is going to cause a jury to decide this case on an irrational basis. It's not something that's going to inflame their emotions. And the photographs are relevant to the issue of intent, which the state had to prove, because this being a case of transferred intent, the defendant's intentions toward the people in the vehicle is what matters. And obviously, the injuries are relevant to show that there was the intent to harm or even kill these individuals in the vehicle. I didn't touch on the issue of harm in my brief, but even if the court found that these, the property value of these photographs was substantially outweighed by the prejudice, the injuries to Ms. Ward just pale compared to those of Mr. Jones, who was the state victim in the case. He was paralyzed. One of his legs was amputated shortly before trial as a result of his injuries. At trial, he was aware that his other leg was also going to be amputated as a result of his injuries. We would ask the court to overrule all three of Mr. Burns' issues on appeal and ask the court to affirm Mr. Tucker's conviction. Yes, sir.
Returning to the sufficiency question,
yes,
the bottom line is the question presented to us is that we have an individual sitting outside of his apartment complex. He hears gunfire. He starts to duck for cover. He is hit in the process of getting undercover. And what we have to associate that injury with intent or other activity is that there were some shootings going on in another unidentified location in the apartment complex.
In the parking lot of the apartment complex, yes. And the indication, the only indication in the record, is that it's the only shooting that was going on, and that the people doing that shooting were Renard Tucker, Warren Cyrus, and Shane Ballard.
But we have nothing to tie the location of his apartment to the location of the shooting.
No,
other
sir.
Than it's within audible range.
Exactly. There is a diagram in the record that shows where the shell casings were recovered, but I do not see any indication of where Mr. Jones' location was in relationship to those shell casings.
Okay.
So that is what we have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Johnson. I'll ask for a rebuttal with this.
About the only thing that I like to say is if the the court looks at the evidence, there's just nothing to show that there was or wasn't other people shooting. Nobody testified to other shootings, but nobody said there wasn't anybody else shooting. The state could have presented such evidence. Well, you know, was there anybody else shooting out in the apartment complex that time? Anybody come out and try to stop it and, you know, shooting at them? Any of that? No, they didn't. It's just left kind of open. And as I say, Mr. Jones is not connected to this shooting in any way. And for that reason, the evidence is clearly insufficient to show that it was an intentional or knowing shooting of Mr. Jones. He wasn't there. There wasn't any showing of a connection. There wasn't any showing that that's the only gunfire out at that apartment complex. There wasn't any evidence that there was other gunfire. We can see that. But it's the problem that there, even in a circumstantial evidence case, you know, are there other reasonable explanations of how it could have happened? That's not the only possible explanation, is the circumstantial evidence. There are other ways that it could have happened. Other people could have been shooting. It could have been a grave accident, someone in a different apartment complex shooting in the air. There's nothing to show it. There's no showing of the angle into which the bullet went into Mr. Jones's body. There wasn't any showing that this particular area was within gunshot range of where the assault was happening on the car and the three people out of the car. The evidence is just not there. And we'd ask the court to reverse this case and order a judgment of acquittal. If the court doesn't do that, we would submit that with all the other error, that at least this case should be reversed on the punishment part and remanded because of the pictures that were admitted and the other issues that would have increased Mr. Tucker's punishment beyond what would have been had those pictures of Shaquina Ward not been there.
Well, specifically in your prayer, you asked for us to reverse the conviction and sentence and to remand the cause for a new trial.
You know, if I didn't put in, I would ask the court to consider allowing me that amendment to, at this point, that we ask for a reversal and a J judgment, entry of a judgment of acquittal, because any time the evidence is insufficient, this court would find that the judgment of acquittal is the only permissible action of the court. And once, in any event where evidence is insufficient, jeopardy attaches, whether it's at trial or on appeal, so that a retrial couldn't be affected anyway.
All right, thank you very much. If you have no more questions, your case is submitted, and thank you for participating in this. And we have, I believe, some time for questions. If you all have any questions.